The first thing would be to throw out the word career, which etymologically is simply, I think, just grounded in the word for course. Mm-hmm. And I think I go back to what my mom, I think I would use my mom's pin and just say, don't, you know, there is no recipe. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a lot of suffering that comes from this feeling that's like we have to do one thing after the other, and that's how we're going to get to this destination that we imagine is where we want to be. And I would say that the first is there is only your path. There is not one path.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Role Models Podcast, a podcast where we host candid conversations with inspiring women about their personal journeys, career histories, and all the valuable lessons and learnings they've picked up along the way. My name is David Noel. I'm the host of this podcast and one of the two co-founders of Role Models, a series of events and podcasts that I started with my friend and co-founder, Isabel. Our guest in this episode is Ara Katz. She's the founder and co-CEO of Seed.com. Seed.com is a brand new consumer health company that aims to disrupt the probiotics industry. And probiotics are, you've likely heard the term before, live bacteria that help keep your gut healthy. Ara and her team of scientists, they're on a mission to radically transform our approach to medicine, hygiene, and diet by applying microbiome science to improve our health and to set a new standard for the true health benefits and the potential of probiotics. We speak to Ara about the idea and journey of starting Seed.com, and you will hear that we catch Ara in a moment of full post-launch energy, which offers a really great springboard into a conversation that includes topics like tips on how to launch a complex and science-based consumer health product, tips on how to cultivate a co-founder relationship with some of the do's and don'ts to follow, and advice on how to balance the detail and the bigger picture when you're in full-on startup mode. Our presenting partner for this episode is again Samsung Next. Samsung Next invests in the startups and the engineers who are redefining the future of software and services by helping them to grow and to scale. The folks at Samsung Next do that by providing funding, by sharing expertise, and by providing an international network of support in their offices in Berlin, London, Tel Aviv, New York City, San Francisco, and Korea. If you want to find out more, head over to SamsungNext.com to get in touch and to find out how they can help your idea and business grow. From our end, thank you so much for supporting this podcast. A big thanks also to our Patreon patrons who support this podcast. We have Magna Quinn, general partner at Spark Capital, who supports the organization Coach2040.org, and Anna Carolina, who is a leadership coach based out of Berlin that you can find on TruthCircles.com. To Samsung Next, to Megan, and to Anna Carolina, thank you so much for supporting the production and the creation of this podcast, the Role Models Podcast. So thank you for listening and enjoy episode number 40 with Ara Katz. Ara Katz, welcome to the Role Models Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Ara, where are you now in the world?
I'm in Venice, California.
Is this where you live?
It is where I live, and it is actually the headquarters for Seed.
For Seed. And we will talk a lot about Seed, but one thing that I want to maybe start off with as a jumping point is that you have started Seed very recently. I mean, you probably have been working on it for a way longer time than what I've seen, but I remember an email from a friend of mine who emailed me and said, it is live. And I'm like, what is live? And it happened to be Seed, your company that you co-founded and co-lead. And it's a few months ago, if I'm not mistaken. And so my first question would be, how have those first few months of being live, you know, the topic that she, the subject line that she emailed me with, how have those months been since going live?
Oh, you know, it's such a great question because, you know, so many people focus on your launch day. And actually, even internally, one of the things I feel like in startups is like you kind of are so launch focused. I guess in life too, you kind of focus on the bigger moments, but you know, it really is kind of the meaning and the fulfillment. And to answer your question, the probably the most magnificent part of launching Seed into the world has actually been the after launch, which is, you know, you sit in a room and in our case, travel the world with a very small group of people. And you can do, you know, as much user testing, and you can do focus groups, and you can kind of believe you know what will resonate. But I would say one of the things that was completely unexpected, or I should say that I didn't realize how much it would make an impact, and what has become such a big part of my everyday and what gives so much purpose, is how people's lives are changed when you make something that impacts their health. And I would say that the most extraordinary thing every day for me, just before we got on this podcast, I got an email from a guy actually who reached out to us, who was a CrossFitter from Florida, who had an incredible story of recovering from heroin addiction and finding his way to CrossFit, which kind of became his new way of kind of both finding himself and also finding a way to help others. And he had reached out to us on Instagram and started taking Seed. And he told us about this incredible experience that he had with our product. And I think the answer, to go back to your question, the most extraordinary thing about everything since June 6th, which is when we launched our first product into the world, has been like an extraordinary kind of daily Instagram post by Instagram post, email by email, kind of minute by minute reminder of why we started this company. And I think that that honestly has been like one of the most profoundly like life-changing experiences for me, because I think people always talk about finding their purpose and they talk about wanting to make an impact. But I don't think when you're sitting around like noodling with your version 26 of your Google Doc of like what your homepage copy is going to be, that you remember why always, like you kind of course inherently understand why you're doing something, but it really isn't until you get that data. In this case, the data of human experience, that like you really, it has changed everything for me, and honestly made, I think, me more inspired to kind of move forward and to move our mission forward. And of course, the most exciting thing is that you build something that resonates with people, not just from a product perspective, a brand perspective. And that's what's happening. And I honestly couldn't say that, like, I'm more excited today about what we're building than I was the day we started and the day we launched. And I think that kind of happens every day for me.
That's such a great description to say that, you know, it's after launch that you actually realize why you started the company. It's not while starting it or while building it. Can you share, so imagine the time after launch to be a mix of, you know, hectic times,
yes,
lots of to-dos, lots of coordination, lots of instant feedback, lots of praise, lots of maybe constructive feedback. How is that? How do you organize yourself and maybe the company as well after a kickoff like this in order to make sense of what's happening in the market then?
You know, we're a science-based company, and the scientific method is one that we really embrace, and that notion of experiment, observe, learn. I think one of the most important things post-launch was just you can't be attached to outcome. You can't be attached to what you thought something was going to do. You have to listen. And I think especially when it comes to people's health, I think the way we prioritize is first and foremost what best serves somebody's body, somebody's health. And that means if someone has a customer service question, I mean, we really deeply prioritize people's experiences. And that could be anything from the way that they're getting their shipment, all the way to, of course, if they have a question about their digestion. And then, of course, if someone's pregnant and they have a question about whether, you know, taking the product. And so I would say, like, one of the biggest priorities in the company is figuring out how we can continue to answer the questions with so much scientific integrity and detail as we do today. Because what we do is that we actually, every question that has any science or health oriented kind of, any health or science oriented questions, we spend a lot of time thinking about how to answer. And that, of course, takes up a lot of our time, but we know that it's incredibly important. And so I think one of the things we have to think about is how we prioritize that, how we scale that, how we can feel and maintain that sense of high touchness and ethics and transparency and empathy. But we can't spend 2 hours on every customer service email. And so that's one of the kind of things we're always thinking about, which is how can we be of most service? But when we get much, as we continue growing at the pace that we are, how do you continue to maintain that, but not be dilutive, and make sure that everyone has the same experience they're having today? Because people are very blown away when they get the responses that we put together. So I would say the priorities are that. I think, you know, every day is honestly a balance of how do you triage and respond to the things in real time, but have a deep, deep understanding that if you don't prioritize the longer term and create a space and a way to even structure meetings and longer term sprints where you can think about big ideas, you will never innovate. And so we're always kind of trying to balance those two.
We can really, I for one can really feel the post-launch energy in the way you describe it. And I think now would be a really good time to share with our audience a bit more about what Seed is and yes. As a company. You mentioned a few keywords that I want to pick up and maybe you can use those to build up. So you said you're a science-based company. It's a company that, supports or wants to support or enable people's health and wellness and well-being.
Sure.
You talked about digestion. You talked about pregnancy.
Sure.
So help us understand and our audience piece it all together into the purpose of Seed.
Sure. So we look at the applications of microbiome science in both human and planetary health. And what that means is thinking about how both our microbes, as well as the administration of microbes. Of course, much of your audience may know about that from a consumer health perspective in the form of probiotics, but they are actually live microorganisms. We are actually made up of 50% of our cell count is microorganisms. And we think about, you know, the advances in microbiome science are happening, especially in the scientific world, at a trajectory that has honestly been almost unheard of in most areas of science. And the way that it is touching almost every aspect of ourselves and our health, from everything from the way we understand reproduction to having children to raising children, the way we treat cancer, the efficacy of chemotherapy, the way we eat, the way we produce vitamins, the way we extract nutrients from food. I mean, and then of course, when you get into planetary health, microbes are incredibly important when you think everything from the health of our soil to how we potentially may solve some of the biggest, challenges facing our environment. And so we think about all the ways that microbiome science can be applied, again, in consumer health, but also in planetary health, and concurrent with, you know, this major trajectory on microbiome science has been this incredible whole trajectory of consumer awareness and consumption of micro-based products, as I mentioned, mostly in the form of probiotics. But in the next decade, they're going to, you know, micro-based products like probiotics are going to disrupt a lot of markets, a lot of verticals, and start to take market share globally from categories, everything from supplements to food ingredients to areas like, you know, infant formula, livestock feed, etc., fertilizers, the way we think about soil. And so, but what has happened, unfortunately, is that while the term probiotic, for example, is a very well-established and scientifically defined term, because there's no regulatory around it except in some areas of Europe, it has been used and kind of diluted so that people think like, oh, I just pick up a probiotic beverage or a kombucha or a fermented food and I'm kind of getting these microbes. And I think, of course, we have a lot of the yogurt industry to thank for that and creating the awareness. But I think what we believe is that there has to be, as we move into the future where microbes are going to play an increasingly bigger part of our lives, the choices we make for our health, as I said, kind of solving some of the world's biggest problems environmentally, there has to be a standard for bacteria. And so we have really come from deep scientific roots, but also understand that, you know, not just having the best science, but it's also the way the science is communicated. And we use the microbiome, which is the 50% of yourself that is microorganism, as a new lens, as a way to shift people's perspective about the way they make their choices every day, and hopefully make best products as well.
And can you talk a little bit more about the products that you started off with? I imagine since it's such a broad area, as you described it, in that could also go into planetary health as well. What's your starting point, and what is the point of view that you start from?
Sure. So, I mean, I should also mention that the reason that I started, I mean, what prompted starting the company was both my pregnancy and then mostly my breastfeeding experience, because after about 4 months, I could only supply about a third of my son's milk. And for someone who spends their time on PubMed and knows, you know, enough science to be dangerous, and knows enough about consumer health products to be probably one of the greatest skeptics. You know, I was so saddened to see kind of the formula options out in the world, and I really couldn't believe the lack of science that was informing those incredibly important decisions that a mother or a parent needs to make in supplementation. And so I really started. We started our journey to reinvent infant formula, and that led us on a kind of multi-year, multi-country, multi-continent journey. To kind of assemble both the scientific advisory board and the platform that informs our product pipeline. Our first product, to your question, is a symbiotic. There's a male and a female formulation. It is the combination of both probiotic strains and prebiotics.
So for people who hear this for the first time,
sure.
How do you explain this in simple terms?
Sure. So probiotics, the most reductive way to think about probiotics is that it's good bacteria. It's introducing good bacteria into your kind of inner world, your ecosystem, in our case, most people kind of know probiotics through their digestive and immune benefits. In our case, as a company, we think about how probiotics, you know, can affect multiple organ systems and have systemic effects across the body. So our first product, for example, has, of course, the digestive benefit. Most people experience, you know, increased motility, reduction in bloating, just increased kind of better digestion. And then in addition to that, in the female formulation, we actually have dermatological strains, which for skin benefits, mm-hmm. And actually it is the first probiotic to increase folate production in the body, and so most people don't know that folate and other vitamins such as B and K, most water soluble B vitamins and K, cannot be produced by mammals. They must be produced by bacteria in your body. And so bacteria can synthesize vitamins. And so one of our strains in our symbiotic in the female formulation actually synthesizes folate in the body, which for everybody is important for DNA replication, but and other reasons. But for women, especially around reproductive health, it's incredibly important.
So you have symbiotics you have two different kinds for targeted men and women. And if I now start using symbiotic, and I think you package it on a monthly basis. What can I expect, or what should I look for to see if it's helping?
Sure. So it's a great question. I mean, the most interesting thing about probiotics, and particularly a product when it's strong and works like ours, is that you immediately, most people almost immediately can feel some sort of digestive benefit. Some people, there's an acclimation period, because if you think about an ecosystem, it kind of wants to maintain homeostasis. So when you introduce bacteria or new organisms into an ecosystem, there's kind of an acclimation period. And so that can be some people that cause a little discomfort. Some people don't feel anything. We have a way that people, because we are a strong product, that people can acclimate, and we kind of include a little protocol in your first kit. But for some people, they can go right to the full dose and they're fine. Once you're acclimated and or starting on the full dose immediately, I mean, one of the most interesting things that you feel with probiotics is that there's this digestive feedback loop that you don't have with other things. Like, you know, some people take a protein powder and you just have, you know, you don't know what it's doing. You don't often feel that it's doing something, for certainly in the long term. And so I think I think the most interesting thing is the digestive benefits. I think the thing that most people report pretty immediately is that they've just never pooped better. And so regularity, ease of expulsion, motility, the feeling that you don't feel kind of that yucky feeling after you eat that a lot of people report, decreased bloating, you know, decrease of gas. I mean, it depends, of course. Everybody is different, but those are the things that are reported most often in the shortest term. Mm-hmm. If you ask what you feel now, the other thing again in the female formulation, as I said, it's not, most people don't feel folate increasing production in their body, but the dermatological, we have a lot of people that report their skin looking and feeling much better.
Mm-hmm. Does this imply that I have to change my lifestyle or change other elements of my lifestyle in order for it to really come to fruition?
I mean, it's a great question. I think as a company, we believe, and again, coming from the perspective of science, I mean, there's probably no other thing you can do that's more important for your health other than your dietary and nutritional choices. There is literally nothing that we could sell anybody in a bottle that could ever trump, sorry to use that word, the choices you make every day. So, you know, there's nothing that, you know, if you are living an incredibly stressed lifestyle, if you aren't sleeping, if you're making poor nutritional choices, if you're not eating a lot of fiber, if you're eating red meat 5 days a week, you know, there's nothing that you can take that kind of counters that effect. Obviously it can still be impactful, but it will never be as impactful as it is, when you're making the right nutritional choices. And one of the things we're working on, and we do already tease this on our social media and in some of our emails and even some of our marketing campaigns, is we're very clear about how important diet and nutrition are. And we will be working on a much bigger program, for that, you know, for next year. But even in the interim, I mean, we try and at least use the microbiome and this notion of kind of feeding your other half, so that every time you sit down, you know, you walk into a grocery store, every time you open a menu, we always think like, how can we give people these kind of like minority report goggles, so that every time they're like making a decision of what goes in their body, they're choosing to consider their whole selves, not just their human selves. And that includes, of course, thinking about the nutritional, the things that are most important for the health of your microbiome, fiber being, you know, one of the key ones.
You described the company as starting from a science-based approach, and then creating products that are targeted at the consumer in order for them to, you know, to generate, you know, an improvement in their wellness or their well-being or their health. These are the connection of those three things. I imagine this to be a tricky or complex thing to piece together in order to communicate something as complex as a microbiome, that unless you're really deep in the weeds and really self, you know, self-learn somehow, self-develop, dive into it, it's really hard for people to understand in very simple terms. And the other thing that I noticed is that the branding of Seed, trying to be a part of the answer to this. So I'd be curious to hear how you approached as a team, the piecing that puzzle together of science plus creating trust on the consumer side, branding, and then maybe another piece being the actual product.
Yeah, sure. So the actual product's almost the easy part at this point, although it is a very sophisticated product. But you know, my partner is probably one of the best in the world at what's called translational product development, which is this area that is about the translation of scientific, in most cases, human clinical research, although other forms too, into a consumer product. And that means preserving the findings, preserving the integrity of the dosages, preserving, you know, the the conditions under which specific bacteria thrive and how they can be biofermented and scale, because not every bacteria grows under the same conditions or not every strain. Mm-hmm. And so the product itself is certainly kind of a work of art. If you look at our supply chain and understood how challenging it actually is to do what we've done. But, you know, to your point, one of the biggest challenges is, you know, and I think you can have the most sophisticated product. It often is who can communicate it the best that wins. And I think one of the things we are incredibly committed to is the not only translation of science into product, but the translation of science, period. The microbiome is like a beautiful narrative device, because a lot of people, when you tell people you want to introduce them to their other half, it becomes, and especially with all of the spiritual kind of memes floating around the world about mm-hmm. wanting to be kind of whole and believing that you kind of want to go inwards, the microbiome actually, despite that it's an incredibly scientific and biological idea, actually offers people, you know, a cool way into science. You know, you can start to think about that there's this kind of community inside of you that actually wants to maintain homeostasis, that wants to help you be healthy, that wants to increase your resilience. They exist to perform functions to make you healthy, and to remove bad bacteria, and to you know, I think that the idea that they want to be in balance, and therefore how can you support them in doing that, actually ends up not being so challenging, depending on who you're speaking to. I'm getting into obviously a little bit more detail with you guys, but you know, one of the things we try and think about is how you meet people where they are, mm-hmm. because we don't think that everything should just be incredibly dumbed down. And in fact, we think that's how wellness trends and actually how the confirmation bias of health information has perpetuated. And it's because people don't want to take that extra few minutes and learn a little bit about biology. Because the truth is that if people just understood a little bit more about themselves, they would just make much better choices. And so I think we try and think about what are the ways that we can translate science that isn't dumbing it down, but just makes it accessible and actionable, which is very different, are two different things. I think we think people are smarter than we sometimes think they are. Mm-hmm. Even when people say, you know, how are you going to reach the masses? I think people are also at a moment where they're very tired. We've never been sicker as a species from non-communicable diseases. I think people, especially in this era of fake news, are just trying to find people that tell it to them straight, and respect them, and aren't trying to just message propaganda, mm-hmm. Either health or political. And so in some ways, we really come from this very counter-programming place. I don't think you can be everything to everybody day one, but the community that we're building today tell us every day, I follow you because I learn something every day. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an incredible empowerment that comes from that.
Now you come, when the first time I came across your name was when your time at Beachmint and then later on at Spring, so sure. Which are two companies that are in a completely different industry, more in a fashion e-commerce industry. So can you talk, because I think that's what I found interesting is this transition of, I wouldn't say career, but it's, you know, it's somehow sure. each step was somehow entrepreneurial. And so how do you explain this to yourself, or how do you tell the people this transition sure. from industry to another, but still the common thread being an entrepreneur or being entrepreneurial?
Yeah, it's funny. Some my friends who, I always joke with my friends that like my friends who, a lot of people think that I kind of was in, I'm putting up air quotes, fashion. And so we always say my autobiography will be, you know, from jeans, JEANS to jeans, GENES.
I love that.
But the truth is that I never really thought of myself as in fashion. And in fact, I started off in media and content and Hollywood and producing films and documentaries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the Media Lab at MIT, I helped start a group called the Center for the Future of Storytelling, which thought a lot about new mediums, new formats, new interfaces for how stories play out. I had kind of consulted for like the weirdest, everything from like the Department of Defense to big advertising agencies to kind of smaller startups in how story kind of gets communicated. And so, and of course the world kind of ends up calling that marketing at a certain point, although I can't, I never thought I was a marketer, but that is what LinkedIn likes to think of you as. Yeah. And so none of this ever surprised me. I think my life has always been dominated by this notion of storytelling and how that creates community. And so even, it's funny, I produced two horror films with George Romero, who you may know from like Night of the Living Dead. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he always said was, you know, I make horror films because I can make movies about zombies to make statements about the things I care the most about in the world, because that's what people will give me money for. And so, you know, I would say like almost every company I started, I certainly had an agenda that made its way, you know, into that, not in a manipulative way, but in a way that, you know, when you end up with a brand, brands are just kind of megaphones for a set of values. And I think they ended up reflecting that. And I think one of the things that especially came out of my Beachman experience and certainly out of storytelling was this notion of just how you can move people and create major communities of really engaged humans with the right story and also the right product. And you know, in our case, health to me has been a big part of my life always, just never really a part of my professional career. But the nerdiness that goes into this was always kind of a big part of my side hustle, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
This may be a question that's maybe a bit technical and one that I didn't share with you ahead of our conversation, but since you bring up storytelling, maybe something that I would love to spend a few minutes on, because it's a topic that has emerged or come up often in conversation like the one we're having on the podcast, but also in conversation I have with, you know, people who are entrepreneurs or even, you know, executives or leaders in companies, where this idea of storytelling is becoming a mechanism or a skill that people are trying to acquire. From your perspective of having worked around the mechanics of storytelling, can you share a bit, a few tips on what makes a good story or a great story, what differentiates a good story from a great story, and also what makes a good storyteller?
Yeah, I mean the big corporate companies who want to quote unquote storytell is a great way to kind of lead into what I think, which is, I mean, most importantly, it has to be in the batter and not the frosting. And what that means is, you know, it's very hard to just like have a company and then just like start to good storytell and like hire an agency and be like, we want to do some storytelling. Mm-hmm. And certainly you can do that. I think that those things can be very impactful. But ultimately, like, you know, I think what people, to me, what makes a good story is that it must be human. It must have a humanistic quality to it that does not feel, I think people, whether it's conscious or not, understand the intention and feel something. And I think emotion, and I think people forget, you know, people always think brands, but like, or big companies, but you know, ultimately these brands and companies are just a bunch of humans sitting in a building, like having meetings, talking about things. Like it's not, you know, there's no like great facade that this like brand exists somehow without them. And so I think the stories that feel the most human, that communicate some aspect of empathy, that doesn't mean that they have to be touchy-feely at all. What they have to say is, I see you. I know who you are. There is some universality to all of our experience here on this planet. And we are going to tap into that for a second, a moment. In some way, it could be funny. It could be sad. It could be incredibly subversive. It needs to, A, know who it's for. I think that's one of the most important things. Mm-hmm. I think the humanistic piece is important. And I think the empathy piece is really extraordinarily important, which is there has to be a doorway for somebody into it.
Now, if you look back, so you shared that you started off as well in the film industry, doing films and documentaries, and then sometime in the fashion tech / e-commerce industry, not now in science and consumer products in the health space. When you look at this trajectory or at this at your life, and you think back at some of the key skills that you've acquired or learned to acquire that you still apply today in building Seed, what would you say would be those skills?
I think there's a few things. I would say I learned this maybe more when I was 4 years old, as my father would probably attest to, which is, and I think it, people say it a lot, but I don't think people, it's a cliche, I guess for a reason, which is that the inability to really hear and process the word no, and to not look at every obstacle as like a major opportunity, is probably like one of my greatest assets. As I said, I'm not sure my dad would agree. But I really think this notion of just persistence, this real and not in a stubborn way where an idea shouldn't iterate, and shouldn't change, and that you shouldn't listen and evolve. But just a general, like, this is going to happen and I'm going to figure out how, which leads probably into the next one, which is, I think I've always been really good at connecting disparate dots. And that means, I guess, seeing the matrix in a way that you can connect things that were not previously connected. And I think that of course is everything that seed is. I think I'd never been able to kind of do it in the scale and maybe level of impact that I'm able to now with seed. But I think that has always been something that I really pride myself on, and that I think has created a lot of value for the companies I've been involved in.
I read somewhere, and I hope this is more of a personal question, and I'm bringing it up because I read it in an interview while preparing, is that in the interview you shared that you had lost your mom at the age of 17.
Yes.
And it's something I want to bring up because today is the 1 month anniversary of my dad's passing, and my mom passed away five years ago. So I'm now, I don't have a mom, nor a dad. And I was curious to see how, and you know, I'm now 39, so I wasn't 17, I was younger, but for me, so first of all, I'm sorry you lost your mom at such an early age. And then secondly, can you share in what way this has shaped you and who you are as a, you know, as a CEO, maybe as a co-founder, as a mom, as a human being?
Sure. Give me a second. first of all, I'm so sorry to hear of your loss. Also, I wouldn't want to gloss over that. You know, it's funny with seed, you know, my sister's a radiation oncologist, and I think everybody deals with death, particularly in this case, cancer, and, you know, in such different ways. And in some ways, I think, you know, of course, my sister found her way to the more literal path of healing. Mm-hmm. And I think in a lot of ways, my experience is there's no mistake that I am here. Because of my experience with her. And it's funny, you know, people always, you were asking me, I didn't get to tell this part of the story, which was that I remember when she was really sick, you know, printing out, you know, PubMed studies and clinical trials from all over the country.
PubMed, sorry to interrupt. PubMed is like an online.
But yeah, it's the online kind of scientific database, kind of internationally recognized database. And I remember printing out clinical trials in my high school computer lab for her. And so I think in some ways I've been thinking and very cognizant of health, for a long time. And I think, you know, the answer is absolutely it informed everything. I mean, it informed my obsession with biology and health my whole life, mostly because when you watch, and I'm not sure, how your parents passed or how close you were to it physically. But I was incredibly close to my mother's, the physicality of her illness, and what it looks like when your body degrades. And in this case, again, what pancreatic cancer did to a 48-year-old woman, which is, you know, both unusual, but also so also unusual to see a younger, healthier body kind of go through that. And I think I always had this sense ever since then. And then even though, you know, she kind of, I think, even instilled this in me earlier, which is I've never been able to fully understand how people can make choices that don't do everything possible to preserve this vessel we've been given. And I think that I knew I would find my way here probably on some level. And I think I never really knew how. And I think I watched this whole world and this whole business of wellness kind of rise. And I never felt like any of it was the answer. Mm. It all felt, while a beautiful door for people to open to themselves, it never felt like it was grounded in like real change. Like it would have really changed my mother's life, for example, or it would have really. And I think I just was, you know, quietly, probably some level, subconsciously waiting to figure out, you know, what would be my way. And I think the microbiome and of course having my child was beautiful coincidences and kind of serendipitously happened in a way that I both met my business partner and my co-founder at the same time that I, you know, was pregnant, that I was thinking about, you know, what is my doorway that I can offer people and what is the way I can make the biggest impact. And the microbiome, which is really this just extraordinary new biology, an entire new way to understand ourselves, to think about our health, to think about our diet, to think about our choices, really was to me that aha moment where I felt like I could take the experiences I had, including the loss of my mother, and do something that could be extraordinarily impactful. And so, yeah, I mean, the quick answer is I think it informed everything if I look back truly. And also, you know, she said to me, you know, one of the last things my mom ever gave me was this little wooden pin that she probably gave me maybe like a month before she died. And it said she didn't always follow the recipe. Hmm. And I've really felt that that is like it's a mantra. I mean, it's this notion that every course is unique. And that she somehow knew that my path would be circuitous.
Can you repeat that, the mantra?
Sure. It's just a little pin that says she didn't always follow the recipe.
Don't always follow the recipe.
The pin says she didn't always follow the recipe.
Okay. That's yes. Really nice. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm sorry if I brought up.
Oh no!
But thank you for being so open and for sharing that.
Of course.
As well, you mentioned also your co-founder a few times now, and so our audience, many of our listeners are either founders already themselves, or they're aspiring to be co-founders and co-founders. And I see this also in the events, the role models events that we host here in Berlin and other cities in Germany, is that people come together and they often ask us, so my co-founder here, Isabel, and myself, they ask us, do you know people that I can talk to found a company? I have an idea here. I'm looking for somebody who has a complementary skill set. Do you know anyone who I should be talking to? And I think so. The reason I asked the question is that, do you have any tips in how you maybe finding a co-founder is maybe the wrong question, but how do you create a relationship that is mutually beneficial, that you can grow from one another over the course of, you know, building companies? Is like, always sounds like a sprint of a year or two, but it in fact it takes, you know, can take decades to build successful businesses and companies. So how did you find your co-founder yourself, and how do you cultivate a relationship that enables you to do your best work?
Mm. So I'm never hung up on how you find your way to someone. We don't have a glamorous story, which is, our introduction wasn't glamorous. I think our getting to know each other period was probably what's most compelling, which is, you know, I think that people, I mean, I think first of all, I think there's two things. One is that somehow people silo business and personal life. Mm-hmm. And I think what I was saying earlier is like companies are just a bunch of humans kind of trying to move forward together with like, hopefully a shared set of values and a mission. And I think we really forget that human piece to it. And I think when you go out looking more transactionally for something. So if I said to you, I wanted to find a husband who was a hedge fund trader and who knew more about buying a house than I do, I'm probably going to call in somebody that may have those characteristics. But maybe that's not the most holistic way to be thinking about this. I think the second is being in business with somebody is a deep, intimate relationship. It is one that I think people absolutely do not take seriously enough. I don't think they really, truly understand what it takes to be in relationship with somebody day in and day out, and then to care for and steward a team, not just your mission and your vision, but also to then be responsible for growing and inspiring and managing together. And then also what it means to be responsible for money together, and responsible to and accountable to both investors and also to your community of customers together. And I think, like, when you put all that, you know, it makes kind of marriage or parenting sound easy. But I think people really, I think the biggest thing that I find, and because I think it is wonderful what you said, is like, yes, of course, find people with complementary skills. I think there's a lot of time, people don't spend the right amount of time together. I think that that's not something you rush. I don't think you have five coffees and put together five PowerPoint slides and then off you go. I think that this is going to be like an extraordinarily important relationship. And I think the best companies and the best relationships are built on really strong foundations and clarity of role of how are we going to deal with it when this comes up? Who speaks to investors? How do, like, all the pieces that end up getting like sticky. Who speaks to press? How do we divide and conquer things? How do you take ego out of the relationship? How do you, not make things proprietary? That was my idea. This is your idea. And I think where you see all these founder lawsuits or disagreements or founders leaving is ultimately because the time wasn't really taken to foster this relationship, which is theoretically one of the most important in your life, certainly by expenditure of time. Mm-hmm.
So it's maybe a tough question to answer because it's always situational the way you describe it. But do you have, based on what you said, do you have do's and don'ts that you would recommend people to follow who want to found a company and find a co-founder?
do spend an inordinate amount of time getting to know them, not just how well they put together a deck or how well they code. Or how great their sales Rolodex is, but really get to know them, be in different situations with them, meet their family, meet their girlfriend, their boyfriend, their partner, spend time not talking about work stuff, go through scenarios of how someone might handle something, write down like a little bit of a kind of written manifesto of how this relationship should look and feel, mm-hmm. How you're going to handle things, how you're going to triage the bad stuff, because the good stuff is not the hard part. And really be aligned and kind of similar to parenting, like be really, really aligned on how you want to manage people, mm-hmm. and what you want, your culture, and what you're really building, and make sure that your North Star lines up perfectly.
This is great advice. Thanks for sharing that. Maybe a question that's connected to this in the startup weeds, in the startup grind, is from my time at SoundCloud in the early days as a seventh employee, and then later on, you know, a company of 400 people. I remember particularly the early days being very challenging in terms of balancing the right amount of time you spend in the detail with the necessary time to create a bigger picture, and this constant pull between the two modes of thinking, of leading, of managing. How do you, having worked in startup environments for so long, how do you apply balancing between those modes of being deep in the details, but also keeping in mind that as a co-founder and co-CEO, you're also in charge of not only setting the vision for the company, but also communicating it and mobilizing people around the vision. How do you balance between the detail and the big picture?
So I can say what I aspire to, and then I can say where I think we're falling short. I would say that I know this is going to sound very logistical and literal, but it really comes down to how you structure your time. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, we're science-y companies, so we always think about, like, well, when's the most optimal neurological, output time of the day? Because it's certainly not at, like, 11 p.m. at night, at least not for many people. And so me and my partner, the way we do that is we take time out of the office, like hours at a time, usually some sort of people call it offsite, but we go somewhere where we're not in the office. That's like probably one of the most important things is like geography of like taking ourselves out of the place where the grind happens, is a great way to be thinking forward. And so that's like definitely one of our tricks. And I know it sounds like a very simple one, but it actually really makes a difference. I think the second is that we schedule time on our calendars with specific agendas that only have to do with things that are not about triaging anything in real time. We use Slack, a Slack channel called Agenda, actually, that he and I maintain for every little item that comes out throughout a day. And then we take time every day where we triage the kind of triage kind of like the stuff that needs to be responded to or reacted to. Mm-hmm. And then on our calendars, we have larger chunks of time that we dedicate to kind of the bigger picture stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that then starts to make its way and trickle into. And one of the things we're trying to figure out is how that then gets communicated to the team and gets kind of broken down either into sprints or deeper thinking or kind of bigger explorations, timelining, et cetera, without kind of distracting the stuff that also has to get done like this week. And so that I would say we haven't perfected, but I would say it is certainly, I guess the first part is being really conscious and aware of it. And so I think that's one of the things we think about, although I feel that even in the last 8 weeks since launch, we've really gotten to a place where I think we're setting the right foundation for that. And the nice thing in what we do versus like, you know, maybe more SoundCloud or in more digital products or some of the stuff I've worked on in the past is that, you know, science takes a long. Science isn't something you can rush, mm-hmm. And so there are some needs. The things that we work on by nature are longer term, and so that kind of sets a nice pace and kind of a lot like kind of forces us into that longer term thinking too.
The key word of longer term, before we jump into our last two, three questions that we ask every guest on the podcast, when you think about longer term, what can we expect in the future from you and Seed, your company?
Well, actually, in the last few days, we announced our first planetary project, which was our probiotic for honeybees testing, which has started in Canada and California, which is very exciting because, as you know, honeybees are dying and microbes and probiotics may be part of that solution. So that was one that just came up. In the future, you'll see a lot more of our environmental projects start to roll out. We will be announcing our next product, which is very exciting, in January, which I will be able to tell you more about then. Mm-hmm. And our mother and infant products, which I did mention already, and certainly our work to reinvent infant formula, we are looking to release that at the end of next year.
Mm-hmm. Great. The last question that we ask every guest on the podcast, and then we have to let you run, go build your company,
sure.
Is the first one is, we talked about skills, and we talked about the skills that brought you where you are. Maybe framed differently, the skills that you would recommend young people to acquire early on in their career that are still relevant, regardless of the industry they're in or the job they're in that remain sure. relevant throughout their career?
Well, I would say the first thing would be to throw out the word career, which etymologically is simply, I think, just grounded in the word for course. Mm-hmm. And I think I go back to what my mom, I think I would use my mom's pin and just say, there is no recipe. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a lot of suffering that comes from this feeling that's like we have to do one thing after the other, and that's how we're going to get to this destination that we imagine is where we want to be. And I would say that the first is there is only your path. There is not one path. And I would say the second is that the destination should not cause any suffering. Mm. And that the path there should be a daily, but well, of course, looking ahead and having goals and all that are wonderful. If it causes suffering, then you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. a third one to add, or?
The third one to add is that it's not personal. Mm-hmm. It's not about you. We don't really know what's going on with people. I think there's that beautiful quote that I will probably mess up, but this notion that you really don't know what is happening to somebody where the skin meets the bone. And it's a beautiful idea that, you know, I think especially younger people, when they're just starting their careers, I mean, someone can be curt on an email, you can not get a job, you can, get passed over for something, you can, have someone speak to you really poorly in a meeting, and you know, all of these things that can feel not good, especially when you're starting your career or really anything that happens interpersonally. I wish that my younger self could say, I always, me and my friends have this thing when shitty things happen or someone's kind of a dick or an asshole, I just put my hand on my heart and I say, you know, I say to myself, like, I'm grateful. That's not how I feel. That's not how I treat people. And there must be something else going on. Of course, not to say that I shouldn't take responsibility if I did something to prompt it, but that, you know, no matter what, I try not to go through the lens of somebody is somehow a shitty person, which I think makes the world fairly small for an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. This is the Role Models Podcast. Do you have role models yourself?
Oh, that's a great, great question. In different ways, I would say Ivy Ross, who is now runs design at Google, but has been prior to that, and through her probably last, I would say almost 8-9 years of my life has been probably one of the most impactful people for me. She is a designer and artist who has found her way to running one of the most important parts of the Google organization. And I think she is like probably one of the most beautiful examples of where empathy and dot connecting finds its way into transforming even cultures like Google. Mm-hmm. And she's been incredibly impactful to me and I think always allowed me and reminded me that really there's nothing else except love, even in a meeting. and she's really been a great role model in how design and the human experience of a brand, of a company, of anything you really are going to put out in the world, is must be human.
The last question we ask every guest on a podcast and also at the events that we host here in Berlin is if you and I travel back in time and we meet the 14-year-old Ara, what advice do you have for her?
Oh, I mean, it's rather Buddhist, but do not be attached to things and do not suffer.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. All right. Where can people find more about yourself and Seed if they're interested in learning more?
Sure. At seed.com and at Seed on Instagram.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to be our guest on the Role Models Podcast. We appreciate
you sharing
so openly and also such a broad range of topics that we talked about. So thank you very much, and we all wish you at Seed a lot of success and all the best for the future.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David. Thank you for all your thoughtful questions.
Thanks to Ara for sharing her personal journey and the super valuable insights on what it's like to launch your own company. If you're a founder or thinking about founding your own company, and you would love to learn more from other founders, don't forget to check out some of the previous episodes of the Role Models Podcast. For example, with Birchbox founder Molly Shen. This episode was produced by me, David Noel, and Kate Lewin, and supported by our friends at Samsung Next. You can follow Role Models on Twitter at Role Models, and then you can engage with us on Instagram stories at @_RoleModels, or you can email us with feedback and guest recommendations to hi@RoleModels.co. And if you have a moment to spare, we would love if you could submit a short rating and a short review on iTunes. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. Until next time.